Pagan Coffee Talk. Here are your hosts, Lady Alba and Lord Knight.
Okay. So we were talking about being at a pagan gather, and something that I noticed, it was wild, because initially my reaction was, that's freaking cool. And then the more I thought about it, I went, that's not cool. So I kind of had a 180 moment on this.
Okay, let's back up here. All right. What was the moment for those listening to us?
There was a little boy of probably about 4 or 5 years old with his dad. Again, pagan gather. So lots of pagans, different kinds running around. And this little boy was wearing a t-shirt that said, I would rather be a wolf of Odin than a lamb of God. And initially, I was like, all right, little dude, I see you. Yeah. I was like, high five, you know. But then the more I sat with it, I was like, that child was probably far too young to understand what that actually means. And it's the realization that that is his parents bad-mouthing another religion
through their kid
and teaching that child a form of hate or intolerance. And I'm like, whoa, that's a fucked up day when the pagans are being intolerant.
Thank you.
So I really had to look at that and go, man, what are we teaching our kids? Look, I get that a lot of pagans are hurt. I get that a lot of pagans, for a multitude of different reasons, were shunned by, dealt with hypocrisy, dealt with shitty people in the church that they were raised in.
Right.
But is that a reason to pass that down to your kids? You can teach them how to be pagan, and you can introduce them to your beliefs without belittling anyone else's faith.
Right.
So what the hell's going on? But it's a little scary. I mean, we're back to...
I have seen an uprise, in the past, especially in the past 4 or 5 years, of, well, for the lack of anything else, Christian bastards.
Yes.
From pagans.
Because I'm saying we, but, you know, right. I'm using the royal we, all of us. We're mad. And I get it. Like I said, I understand that there's been a lot of
bad blood.
Yeah. But at some point, we have to get over it. At some point, we have to go, okay, you know what? I survived a church that I didn't like. I'm here. I'm intact. You know, it's not like the old days where we got put on the rack, you know?
No. Nobody's getting burned.
No, you were emotionally scarred, right? You were mentally maybe scarred, but you found the right religion for you. So focus on that and not on the hatred towards this other faith, because really the faith didn't do it. People did.
Right. Now, what would you say to those who would sit there and go, but yet I sit back and watch them on doing the YouTube videos and stuff like that, bashing.
Oh, yeah.
Christians bashing us witches and pagans for our belief system.
But I don't feel like we see as much of that anymore. No. I'm not saying we don't see some of it.
Well, again, first of all, let me state this. Those women or those people that they'll bring on like the 700 Club every so often.
Yeah.
Oh, I've, you know, battled my way. I don't actually believe these.
But they're
people.
Extremists too.
Yeah.
They're so far out there in their own stuff. I don't pay much attention to that. But here's how I look at it. See, like you said, last 4 or 5 years, you can now buy a shirt at Walmart, right?
Right.
It doesn't get more Christian founded than Walmart. That says, we are the daughters of the witches you couldn't burn. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And that's a common battle cry now. We are the granddaughters, the grandsons of the witches you could not burn. That's pretty bold.
Yes.
I don't mind it so much as the shirt the little boy had on, because it was specifically calling out the Christians, even though, yes, the Christians were known for persecution and largely, you know, the witch trials were Christian fueled.
Right.
There were other things happening there. And if you know your history, you understand that there was a lot more going on. It was about land acquisition. It was about money. It was about,
About taking actual property. Yeah. Power and property away from people.
So they were just doing it under the guise of God. And let's be honest, that's happened throughout history. How many times? That's nothing new. But yeah, this little kid's t-shirt, I was like, oh no. Because I don't understand why to put our own religion on a pedestal, for lack of a better way to put it, means we've got to kick somebody else.
It's
very strange to me.
It makes no sense to me.
No.
At all.
There are pagan aspects of Christianity. There are pagan aspects of Judaism. There's pagan aspects of the Islamic faiths and Muslim and so many countless other religions. Why are we not focusing on commonality?
Versus.
Yeah.
I mean, because again, the pagan traditions in these
Judeo-Christian yep.
beliefs, we've been doing this dance for a long time.
We have. I mean, look, I get a giggle now that when you drive around, I see it around Charlotte a lot now, the churches are actually putting up cute little signs and messages for Halloween. It's not the big scary thing anymore.
No.
They're actually incorporating it into some of what they believe. Like, I saw one the other day. It was basically like, it's autumn, come inside and fall for Jesus. You know, and I was like, all right, that's cute. Like, come on. You know, but I've seen others that have to do with trick or treating, or that have to do with, you know, Halloween and, you know, boo and, you know, and I'm like, this is great. This is great. This is that church making a modern effort.
Yes.
And being inclusive. And I'm like, so what the hell is our problem?
I don't know. I don't get it. I don't see why in the world people in the pagan community seem to think that they have to destroy another religion to build ours up.
Why is everybody so angry?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. It's and more so, why is that hurt and that anger not being addressed and analyzed spiritually and being dissipated? How do you spiritually grow if you're hanging on to that?
Right.
That is going to be your biggest barrier and the biggest blockade to moving in a forward direction.
I mean, we became pagan and mm-hmm. this tradition and all this. Mm-hmm. When we did this, we left those traditions and stuff behind.
That being said, prime example, because I am still, because it doesn't matter, I am a baptized Catholic. I have been through all of the Catholic sacraments. Do you know how many children of friends I am the godmother to? I had one girlfriend who went, oh my God, that's right. I completely forgot. You've been confirmed. You're a Catholic. Well, I mean, I'm not a practicing Catholic, but yes, I guess if you want to be technical, I can't have my kids baptized in the Catholic Church unless their godparent is somebody because I can't do it. I was raised whatever.
Right.
And I'm like, all right, sign me up. Because what's the difference? What is the difference between being a spiritual advisor to a child of another faith or being a spiritual advisor to a child of my own faith?
Nothing.
No, not really.
I mean, they're still kids.
Right. And I mean, at the end of the day,
I mean, your spiritual guidance ends at, hey, it's nap time.
I mean, it's a little more than that. But what is spiritual guidance for children? Morality,
mm-hmm.
right? We really want to write teaching them right from wrong. Let's boil it down real simply. It's teaching them to be responsible citizens, right? It's teaching them to be mindful of others, whether it be people or nature or both. It's teaching them forgiveness, love, how to process emotions. I mean, it really is all the same, no matter the deity at the end of the funnel. So who cares? But so much anger, so much resentment floating around. And I would love to see comments on this. I would love if people would comment and write in and give us their thoughts on this so we can chew on it a little bit more, because
again, I think this is a problem in the community, yeah. and it's something we need to fix.
Yeah. And we need more perspective on it. We need to have discussions about, we're not going to heal unless we talk about it.
Right. Well, again, we've even gone to the point where we even have a class in an attempt to get you not to hate Christianity. So
yes.
Much.
Yes. Because it's such a common denominator. I have only had one student, one that has been completely and utterly devoid of any religious upbringing or any other faith influencing their life. They were not raised pagan. They simply were raised with nothing.
Nothing.
Their parents were basically atheists, agnostics. They right. just did not raise their kids in any type of
did
religion.
Did not discuss it.
So this person was a blank slate. It was the most refreshing thing I'd ever seen. Because they had no preconceptions. They had no hang-ups. They had no anger, no... All they had was curiosity. Plain and simple. They had pure, and we would sometimes get into class discussions where, yes, people would talk about their experiences with different churches. And this poor woman was like, I don't know what you're talking about because that never happened to me.
It makes no sense to me. I can't believe people would actually behave that way.
it was so much so that I had to send her down a side quest to research and get a more well-rounded understanding of other faiths, because she had nothing to go off of. But that's, most of people are like, no, they walk in the door and they're just like, you go, what were you raised? It's like, down boy, relax. So
I mean, trust me, my heart stops every time they go, oh, I was raised Southern Baptist. Yeah. Oh, crap.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know. It's so, yeah, I mean, if you're listening to this, you know, drop us a note. Tell us your experience. Give us a story or two. We'd like more comments in general. We'd love for people to participate, ask questions, you know, give us other topic ideas. Oh, man, send us coffee. That's always...
We don't turn down coffee often.
No, just send beans. Yeah.
Send the plant.
Mm. So, Lord Knight, the holidays are almost upon us.
Yay!
So, for most people, that means gluttonous eating.
Yay!
And, ironically, for a lot of pagans, it means fasting. And you said it yourself, it's not a topic we hear about often. And, you know, that's kind of true. I do want to...
Well, let's get some caveats out there.
Please. I do want to say, first and foremost, if you have an eating disorder, if you have suffered from an eating disorder in the past, don't listen to this. Just don't.
Just don't.
Just don't.
All right. And if you have medications and stuff that you have to take with medication... Please take your medication appropriately.
Yeah, we're not suggesting anything that puts anyone's health in danger. We first and foremost want you to be aware of that. But
and before doing any fasting, please speak with your doctor.
Yes, but it is a fairly normal practice. I typically fast any ritual day, Mm-hmm. And anytime I know that I'm going to be attending or conducting ritual, I will do my damnedest to fast. Now, does that mean zero food, zero liquid? No. Mm-hmm. No, not really, because, you know, it varies as your life changes and age and medications, all the things you mentioned. Yeah. I used to.
I mean, because we have people, they're diabetics and stuff like that. Sure. They have to eat and take certain.
Yeah, if you have hypoglycemia, I mean, there's a number of different conditions. Medications alone, a lot of people can't take their medication if they're not with food because it'll make them sick. You know, nowadays, that's kind of what I do. I do the bare minimum calorically of what's necessary to take my meds. I'll drink coffee and water black throughout the day. And that's about it until after a ritual.
Now, let's start this. Now, normally we'll do a fasting for certain rituals.
Yep.
Some will be up to 3 days.
Yes.
Now, we have to explain to people how would you explain to someone how they would get to be able to fast?
So I think the first thing is you have to train yourself. Intermittent fasting right now being so popular as a diet is a good place to start. You sort of, you know, you're going to designate a block of time maybe where you prolong having your first meal of the day or ingesting right. your first calories. You can't go from never having fasted before to just I'm just going to fast.
No, you can't slam the, you know.
If you can stay in bed for 3 days and not be around people and, you know, sure, that'd be lovely, but not realistic for most of us.
Well, what we tell most people is, like, at the beginning of the week, if you're going to be fasting for the end of the week, you would start off by just maybe
reducing the amount you're eating, cutting out heavy carbohydrates, cutting out sugars, things that you're going to crave later, reducing caffeine content, you know, and getting to the point where each day you're eating lighter and lighter, meals. Yeah. But it's not easy. The question, I think, really becomes why. Why do we do it? Why is it an important practice?
Well, there's some physiological things that happen when we start to fast.
Mm-hmm.
And our body actually starts producing certain hormones and neurotransmitters.
Mm-hmm. Chemicals, sure.
And chemicals. Yeah. And these often spike during fasting, which will put you more into a meditative style state.
It's you're putting your body through a bit of hell so that your mind can
be free.
Disconnect. Yeah. And it's been done throughout ages. I mean, we're not the only faith to honor this. I mean, even modern Jewish people have periods of fasting.
Right. Because they do that break fast.
They do it at a couple of their major holidays, and then they also do it when they at funerals. There's periods of mourning and fasting. But you have to, again, it's thinking about preparation. I think that that's the big thing. It's making sure that during the days that you are fasting, what you are consuming is very clean eating. Lots of fruits and vegetables, nuts, seeds, you know, things that are very unprocessed, as pure as they can be, to still fuel yourself
during this time.
Yeah.
Same.
But you're being mindful that, yeah, you're eating very, very small quantities. Broth has always been kind of the go-to for most of us for a lot of fasts. You know,
and drinking a lot of water.
Yeah, lot of fluid intake.
A lot of water.
And for most people, honestly, you know, and especially if you've ever done any kind of diet, the first 3 days are the worst.
Yes.
That's the hardest part. And usually by day three, we're ending it anyway.
Right.
So it's not so bad. But you really do have to know your body, and you have to know your triggers, and you have to prepare. You might have to change, you know, social outings to accommodate. You have to, you know, shop ahead of time, because if you're trying to fast and just caught completely off guard,
we all know how dangerous it is to go to the grocery store hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And after being, what, 2 days of fasting?
Oh my God. Yeah, no.
That is not going to go well.
and again, I've seen a lot of people who, even though they're perfectly healthy and they're not diabetic, they're not hypoglycemic, they still end up with blood sugar issues from a fast.
Yeah.
People with high metabolisms are usually the ones who suffer the most, because their body just goes, holy shit, what are you doing to me? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's interesting, because we don't often talk about why that cleanse is important as well. Like, what are we flushing? What are we getting rid of? And I mean, we know obviously what a fast does. You know, you're purging your body of a lot of garbage that you're potentially putting into it all the time. But how does that aid?
I believe for me at least, for some reason, going through that process, it seems to be easier to flush out my concerns, my emotions.
Interesting.
All right. Yeah. Because I'm empty, those things become empty too.
So again, free the body, free the mind.
Freeing the body. It starts to, I think it reminds us that this world is very addictive to a certain extent.
Yeah. And there's also that fun little, sometimes we suffer to learn.
Yes.
And that's something that...
That little?
Well, at our temple, we have always said it, and we've drilled it into the heads of our neophytes and our first degrees. When we say suffer to learn, I mean, we're not talking about tormenting yourself, but there is a discomfort to going through that process. I mean, look, a lot of pagans smoke. And man, when we look at them and go, you got to go 3 days.
Yep.
Woo!
Oh, God.
They get, I mean.
I can give up food. I can give up all that.
Yeah, don't take away my cigarettes. I mean, you know, again, it's the addictive components. I mean, it's rough. And it really does have a profound impact.
Now, could part of all this also be us trying to show that we have control over ourselves in this world?
For me, I see it more as an act of sacrifice.
You see it more as an act of sacrifice?
Mm-hmm. Because, well, again, remember, Catholic upbringing, so Lent, you know.
Right.
You give things up as a way to show the gods your devotion, your loyalty. But again, that willingness to suffer. And I do think that, you know, there's something pretty powerful about that. But yeah, very rarely do I see it as me having control over anything.
Well, I mean, you're showing control over yourself.
Sure.
All right. I mean, sure. It's just like, you know, just like you just said, I'm like every other pagan, I used to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a lot for me to quit.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
but also, I don't know. See, because I look at that and I go, if you're not giving it up permanently,
right,
then not really. But what we're doing is we're putting a kink in the chain somewhere.
Right.
And saying, you just got to get through 3 days. And most people just pick their cigarettes right back up after those 3 days are over. It's not like they actually plan to make this a long-term thing. If that's the case, then yes, I see that more as this is me exerting my willpower and taking control of this situation. So, what else do you think becomes important about the fasting process that maybe people don't realize?
Besides the general medical concerns when you're doing this stuff, you know, doing it. You got to remember, there is a point in doing these where you do become less graspy on reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is something you have to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Because for the lack of anything else, yes, after about 3 or 4 days of fasting, you can sort of feel stoned.
Yeah, you're loopy.
You're loopy.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
And you have to keep that in mind in your own head. If you don't, you kind of like, it's kind of like knowing you're drunk and sitting back and going, yeah, I know I'm drunk. I know this is all blown out of proportion in the whole nine yards, but I can't stop it.
Now, what I think is interesting about that is that sometimes when you have a group ritual, and usually on a major Sabbath, you have a fairly large group of people all fasting. So the collective, right? What happens when you have all of these people that are hungry, a little tired, a little on edge, a little bit of a headache, right? From all of these things, like, but we're all working together. It's interesting.
And yet when you're in ritual, all those problems seem to go away, the snippiness.
Well, it's funny because you would think that under those circumstances, you would have a bunch of really snippy, annoyed people running around. And I've found it to be quite the opposite.
See, I have too. No, you're right. I would expect to be sitting there and like having to look down at somebody gnawing on my knee.
Right.
Because they're hungry.
Right.
It looked good.
Right.
Let me put some barbecue sauce on that.
Whereas I have seen in our temple plenty of occasions where you have people who haven't eaten in 3 days, but on that third day, they're preparing food.
Yeah.
For a feast that's still got another 12 hours to go before they can eat.
And not even thinking about it.
Nope. And I mean, if they are, it's a passing thought.
Yeah. No, because I'm sure these people, just like any other good cooks, are sitting there and every so often going, taste.
Yeah, you kind of have to, but at the same time, you're still not really consuming enough to be satisfied. Actually do anything. No, so that delayed gratification, it's an effective tool. But for some reason, we hear more about it in other areas of our lives. I don't feel like fasting is as prevalent anymore.
As a ritual experience or a religious experience of sitting there fasting and meditating is an actually interesting thing to go through.
It is. And we're funny because when we say fasting, we don't just mean food.
No.
Sex is off the table.
Mm-hmm.
God, what else? I'm trying to, we get pretty regimented for those 3 days.
Yeah. No sex.
No food. Minimal food. Only things that are, again, very clean, very natural, very healthy.
Very little coffee.
Very little caffeine. No nicotine. No drugs. When possible, if it's a medication that is not dire or essential to someone's well-being, then yes, we will come off of unessential medications or supplements because, again, that's just one more thing we're putting in ourselves. Jeez. I know as a woman, one of the things is we write no makeup, no nail polish, we're very stripped down during that time.
Yeah.
It's primitive almost.
Almost.
Yeah.
Well, the idea is to, again, to get as much of these toxins out, to get as much of these chemicals and stuff that we're putting in our bodies. That might not necessarily be the best thing for us.
It's trying to go back to a place of being pure is the wrong word, but cleaned, cleansed,
now,
new.
Now, here's what I always found funny, is after coming off a fast, you would think you would want to eat a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So coming off the fast, okay, let's talk about breaking a fast, okay?
Well, one of my favorite stories was Lord Raceland years ago talking about how someone, after a fast, someone gave him a grape. And he, in his mind was like, oh my God, this is going to be the greatest grape I've ever had. And he goes, it was almost a bit repulsive. To because it was like, he's like, it wanted to get stuck in my throat and it was just, he's like, it was not enjoyable. And normally when we step people out of a fast, we're like, you got to take it slow.
You got to take it slow.
Little bit of soup, nice piece of toast, piece of fruit. Mm. You're not going to sit down and gorge
yourself
immediately after. No, you'll get sick.
You'll get sick in a heartbeat and be throwing up.
Yep.
So, coming off a fast is just as important as making sure you're properly going into a fast.
That's true. It's very true. Yeah, it's a preparatory phase, no matter how you look at it.
It's definitely not something you're going to do just because it's a Thursday.
No.
Or because, no. You know, some list told you to do it today.
Mm-hmm.
This is something you have to sort of set yourself up for.
But if you've never done it, also, it is interesting to at least experiment with it in your workings and see
what happens
if it benefits you, or if it actually ends up being a negative to the point where you go, no, that's not for me. And that's okay.
And I would just sit there and suggest, hey, just do it for one day.
Mm-hmm.
Do it for one ritual. See what happens.
Yep.
And don't get too addicted on it and just quit eating altogether.
Yeah, no, please no.
Please keep on eating.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing. Abstaining from something for a long period of time can have these oddly euphoric effects. I mean, sex is a good example of that. But it can be dangerous if you go too far.
Right. I mean, just like anything else we ever talk about in craft, it's always moderation.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, we love that man to death for just coming up with moderation.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. Yeah. But fasting is, you're right. People don't really talk enough about it. I think they think it's sufficient to just go, okay, just fast for a day. Maybe not. It takes a little more guidance. It takes a little bit more prep.
There are certain people, that might have to sit there and drink juice throughout the day.
Yeah.
While fasting to keep up their sugar, and it happens.
Or electrolytes, or, you may have to, use a protein powder or, something like that that's going to help you to, maintain metabolic homeostasis. Getting out all my science words today. Yeah. But, the good thing is we're not fasting right now, so we can have more coffee.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week for another episode. Pagan Coffee Talk is brought to you by Life Temple and Seminary. Please visit us at lifetempleseminary.org for more information, as well as links to our social media, Facebook, Discord, Twitter, YouTube, and Reddit.
We travel down this trodden path, a maze of stone and mire. Just hold my hand as we pass by a sea of blazing pyres. And so it is the end of our days, so walk with me till morning breaks. And so it is the end of our days, so walk with me till morning.